Hey everyone, and welcome to The Kodakery. I'm Megan.
And I'm Josh.
Cinematographer Sean Price Williams joined us this week to discuss his collaboration with the Safdie brothers on their latest film, Good Time, which debuted in May at the Cannes Film Festival to critical acclaim. It's out now in wide release, so we wanted to talk with Sean about what it was like working with the Safdie brothers, as well as some other filmmakers he's worked with in the past. He gives us some great insight into what it was like shooting with two perf 35mm, as well as some of the perks to living in New York City as a film lover. So, let's jump into the Kodakery and talk with Sean.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Kodakery. Today in the Kodakery, we have with us cinematographer Sean Price Williams. Sean has collaborated with friend of the Kodakery, director Alex Ross Perry, on multiple projects, and his new film with the Safdie brothers, Good Time, is in theaters now. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Sean, congratulations on the feedback on Good Time. Like, you guys debuted the film in May at the Cannes Film Festival to, I think, incredible acclaim. We've seen a lot of positive feedback from all over the place on the film, and a lot of excitement has grown up until now. It seems like it's been quite a ride. What brought you to this project originally?
I have collaborated with Josh and Benny Safdie on most of their projects in the past 5 years, I guess, 6 years maybe. We started with Black Balloon, short film that was produced for, I'm not sure what the budget was or even necessarily the hope for that film, but we made it with Andy Spade, and he produced it, and we got along super well. So I liked how they work in New York, basically. I spent a day with them on, or a couple of days on, with them on Daddy Long Legs, just kind of hanging out and acting a little bit. And they're sort of, they had a magical connection to the city. They would just get away with everything. I mean, everything that you would think twice about doing for legal reasons or for, they were pulling everything off, and it was just incredible. I said, wow, these guys really have some deep, strange, mystical,
magical connection
to the city. So, so I was really excited to do Black Balloon, where we were stealing everything all over the streets in Manhattan, and we had a balloon puppet, basically, that we were just bouncing around through crowds in Midtown, and it was a lot of fun, and then we played some festivals and did whatever. It was a Vimeo staff pick, and I don't know how many people have really seen it. Probably not that many, but I think that's kind of the beginning of this kind of maybe little trilogy of New York movies that we made. They get a little bit darker and weirder, which second will be heaven knows what, and then the new one, Good Time. It all kind of work as a piece for me, strangely.
I read that you had like 2 weeks prep time for Good Time anyway. I mean, is that normal of the Safdie brothers?
When we have limited budgets, prep time is sort of, it's a little bit fantasy, It's like, oh yeah, this is what we'd like to do. This is what we'd like to do. And then the reality, of course, is a whole other thing. And when you're filming, it's just a lot of reality check, So if you have a big budget and you can really make dreams come true, then prep time is sensible. Otherwise, it's just building yourself up for a lot of disappointments. And so as little prep time as possible in the lower budget movies for me. The prep time I would also include the past 10 years I've known Josh, and watching movies together and really like understanding each other's tastes and what to do. That way when we are on set, we don't have to like really discuss, what would you want, mm-hmm. I know what he wants kind of a little bit more usually, or Benny as well. So I think prep time is also just hanging out,
Right.
So that part of prep time I love, but being in a production office and stuff can be pretty awful for me. But we did do tests. We did some tests, screen tests, makeup tests, film, because we'd never shot 35 before. So that was really what a lot of the prep time was for Good Time.
Okay.
It was just really getting to know what we were doing with the camera and the format.
And were you involved in some sort of storyboarding or anything like that?
Never any storyboarding with those guys.
Okay.
Or with most of the filmmakers I work with, there's no storyboarding. If we have an action sequence that we need to sort of, or we're fibbing some locations, cheating some locations, then we do it a little bit. More like shot lists. So never storyboarding, just some shot lists. That's about all we have.
Right.
So storyboarding is when you have, you know, all the resources.
Yeah.
And budget, yeah. And then you know, yeah.
For you as a cinematographer, we talked about the collaboration a little bit with the Safdie brothers. Could you contrast that for us, like when you work with Alex Ross Perry? Like how do you have to adapt your style to work with different personalities, or do you just kind of approach each project the same?
Well, those guys, the Safdies and Alex, are completely different styles of directors. They both, I would say, have a certain amount of trust in what I'm doing, but Josh is very much more involved in the setting up shots and the, you know, just framing and everything. He's looking at a monitor the whole time. He's watching it on his little handheld monitor running around. Mm-hmm. And Alex never looks at monitors. He sometimes looks in the camera before as I'm setting a shot up just to get an idea of what I'm shooting. But he doesn't like monitors. He just likes watching the actors and working with the actors. And then he enjoys getting the footage back and watching them. It's like Christmas for him. And he's really surprised, and he likes that part, I think. So they're really opposite in that way. And I like both styles. I like being able to go back and forth. Right after the principal photography, a good time, I did Golden Exits with Alex, and you know, like two weeks later or something like that, I think. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the difference. Also, I like working with first-time filmmakers because they're still figuring out what their style is like that as far as how they work with the camera and everything. And sometimes they have very unreasonable ideas of what we're doing, and it's fun to like just sort of see how they discover themselves and how they work.
Right. Cool.
So, but the, yeah, I'd say Alex and the Safdies are two absolute sort of different sides of the coin.
Right. And both of those were shot on film, too.
Yeah.
You said Good Time was 35mm. I cannot recall what Golden Exit
was. It was 16, correct?
Super 16, yeah.
Super 16, right. You know, what's that experience like for you? It seemed like a lot of the stuff that you've worked on was shot on film, not everything, but...
I mean, I always prefer to shoot on film because I just enjoy getting the footage back and having it look better than it did in real life. I mean, it's sort of as simple as that. I'm not happy with what I see in real life, so I hope we can make it a little more interesting. Maybe that it also is grimier or like uglier too at the same time, but different, you know. It's an expression of what we're seeing, so that's and I feel like it's really hard for me to express through the Alexa, for example, and impossible on the Red camera for me. I just have no understanding of how to make anything out of that camera. I've tried but you know, I just understand, I guess, better what I can, you know, what even what a fortuitous sort of situation with the sun or something that we didn't plan for, I just know how it's gonna maybe, or at least I think I know how it's gonna react on film better than anything else. So, but I still, like, I always get delighted to see stills and the dailies, because it's always even better than I thought. I've never had a misfortune so far. I'm knocking on wood, shooting on film.
I did too.
Still waiting for that day. But I worked on a music video last week, and everyone on the production was a little nervous about shooting on film. They hadn't done it in a long time, and you know, just were nervous about it. And I, you know, part of my job is just to make everybody feel at ease about shooting on film. Like, yeah, don't worry. They're looking at little monitors that look crappy on, you know, from a 16mm sensor, and they're, you know, I'm saying, it's going to look better, don't worry. And then they're always happy at the end.
Can you tell us what video that was that you were shooting?
It's a company called Dictators. For the artist is Tove Lo. She's a Swedish singer.
Nice.
Well, she lives in America, but she lives in Brooklyn, I believe. It was a lot of fun, and we had a bigger crew than I'm used to. Also, it was just a music video, one day shoot. The crew was probably three times the size of the Good Time crew.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're shooting on a little 16mm camera. So, but I think I just saw stills yesterday, for example, and I was pretty tickled.
Yeah. Excellent. So you mentioned that doing Good Time was the first time that you shot 35mm. So you're very familiar with 16. And what was it like transitioning from 16 to 35? And
well, we're shooting 35 two perfs.
Hold up. Time for a film fact check. Typically, 35mm film runs vertically through the gate of a motion picture camera, four perfs high,
which is short for perforations, the holes on the side of film, with a running time of 4 minutes and 26 seconds for a 400-foot roll. 2 perf, as you can imagine, is 2 perfs tall, and therefore uses 50% less film, giving you 8 minutes and 53 seconds for a 400-foot roll. 2 perf gained popularity in the 60s in spaghetti westerns. It's close to a 2.35 aspect ratio, making it a good fit for widescreen viewing.
Well, we were shooting also, we're shooting 35 2 perfs. We're already, like, you know, degrading it a little bit, you know, because if you shoot 35 clean, sometimes you could, you know, after everything's, you know, gone through all the processes and post-processes, it's so clean that it looks like you could have shot it on, you know, 4K or something. So then you're like, well, why do they even shoot on film? So we like to try to maintain texture, so we did the 2 perf thing. Also, it was for cost reasons. Mm. Sufficient. I there's so few 2 perf cameras in New York and LA. I don't really understand why, because it's such a great way of shooting a movie, and it is affordable, much more affordable that way. So I would recommend the rental houses get a couple more 2 perf cameras, because I think it might start being more in demand. I hope. I would love to do it again. We were you know, we talked about shooting on with anamorphic lenses and things like that, but Josh and Benny thought it maybe was a little too, you know, cute, a little too nostalgic or something, kitschy.
Do you have to operate any differently with 2 perf than you do with regular 35?
Not really. No, not operating. It's just knowing you're shooting on flat, with flat lenses and getting that wide frame. I've shot very few movies, 2.35, and it's always really fun for me because it's, you know, it's the shape that many of my great favorite movies are, like old Russian movies or all like that, and, you know, a lot of great Hollywood movies from the 70s and all that sort of, you know, reference kind of pops into my head when I just look at that shape, and it's really easy for me to frame quickly and easily handheld, I think, with that shape. But also I'm very happy with square. I like 4x3. I love that. I love that frame for faces and for close-ups. It's still the best, I think.
Cool. It would appear from your resume of work that you have done that, like, almost every single one of the films you have made has been shown at some sort of independent film festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that, like, just by chance, or do you think, I mean, how can you explain that?
I don't know. There's a couple that have not surfaced. I mean, there's a couple of movies that aren't even on IMDb that I shot that I'm kind of heartbroken about, just that they've just, but usually it's for film or for reasons not really related to the film. Even there could be just, could have been, you know, some money issue that just never got finished, or some family dramas that the filmmaker went through that, you know, just stopped them making the film, finishing the film, whatever. But for the most part, yeah, they play it, you know, and not minor festivals either. Usually, at least like a South By and up.
Sundance, Cannes.
Yeah. But also, I used to go to all the festivals, and I'm friends with, like, a lot of programmers and things like that, and maybe that's, like, cheating. I don't really know.
I don't usually,
I'm not the one submitting the film, so.
Yeah, it's true, right. So it's not cheating, but, so you feel better.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But is that...
I go to the movies all the time, and I make friends with movie people. So, there is a community, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And how important do you think it is, or has been for your career as an up and coming filmmaker, and then for, you know, young people who are looking to, you know, they're out of college, they want to learn about cinematography when they break into the industry? Are film festivals a really important part of kind of being a new filmmaker?
It really bothers me when filmmakers are making films for the festivals. I think that's a really nasty little trap, because then they're making movies like in a format almost that they think is going to work for the programmer, or the beginning of the movie has to be snappy so that the programmer will finish watching it and things like that. Or, you know, there's other festivals that, you know that the film will get programmed if you have a 10-minute shot right in the beginning of the movie or something like that, you know. There's just so many sort of tropes and traps that that filmmakers fall in trying to get into the festivals. And then that means that the festival programmers are somehow the, like, overlords of the culture that we're in, you know, the film culture of today, right? Yeah, it's just like ten guys and girls are the ones that everyone's making the movies for. I think that's a really terrible thing. I wish there was an alternative. And films shouldn't have to go to the festivals to be able to, you know, find a home in the world. I wish that that was, you know, the way, more that there was just an alternative. But we're trying to figure that out and coming up with nothing.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, I guess because so many films get the rights for distribution, all that stuff get bought at festivals, it's important to go. But then, to your point, are you making films because you want to make that film and tell that story, or are you making a film so you can try to get it sold?
So you can try to get it sold. And then, of course, the reality is, I think nothing I've ever shot that's played at Sundance has been sold at Sundance. Like, they just don't. You know, they can get good reviews and people like it, but they just never get bought at Sundance, so the whole trip kind of becomes a waste. Because it's certainly not pleasant, Sundance, in my opinion. So the streets are just covered in ice, and the sidewalks, and everyone's slipping and moving so slowly. And then there's nowhere good to eat, and the parties are terrible. They end early. It's just like the whole thing is just so silly.
Yeah, I'm not going.
And has that changed? Like, is this is what film festivals have evolved into, or has it always kind of been that way?
It's been 10 years that I've been doing the festival thing, but each festival is different too. I think Locarno is incredible. Locarno is still trying to find new voices and things like that. South by used to be a festival that was sort of trying to discover new voices. I think that the festivals that are genuinely trying to discover new voices are not buyers festivals, though. So there's two different things. You know, there's the festivals that you like going to because you can see the movies and see new movies and see new voices, and then there's the festivals that are just business, you know. And I thought that Cannes maybe was still a festival for discovery, and it really didn't feel like that this year. It felt like just all business and very corporate and very, you know, fashion-y and just wasn't about cinema. I didn't feel like, maybe that's been, I'm sure if I talked to filmmakers that were going there since the 60s or 70s, they would say that that had changed many years ago.
Right.
But when I was in Cannes 8 years ago, it felt more about movies, but that was also because I was younger and maybe just seeing it through rose-colored glass. I don't know.
It's a business when it comes down to it.
Yeah. I mean, business is a part of making movies. It's a part of the art of it. You know, I know that. I listen to Alex Perry talk about movies to some people. He talks about agents. He talks about, just the business end of things and where and how the movies are really made. And he gets thrilled by that stuff. I'm a little bit more romantic and unrealistic about, you know, what movies are, including what is included in the art of cinema. You know, I guess there is a big part of it, is business of it.
When you say, you know, movies are a little bit different for you, it's more about the art. Articulate for us what that is. Like, what are movies to you? What are you hoping your voice adds to cinema?
That's a huge question.
I know.
Whoa. Has anyone ever answered that?
A couple.
They stumbled through.
Yeah. That's like the biggest question in that. I don't know if I could possibly answer it. It's the thing that's meant everything to me since I was a little boy, and I wanted to become a filmmaker in a very different time than what movies are now. And as a, you know, I still don't even know if I've made a real movie. You know, I mean, I guess Good Time is because it's playing in Delaware. So I guess that's a real movie. But, you know, we make these little movies. They're more like experiments, or they're fun things. I don't know if they count as cinema. And there's definitely a lot of movies I see at festivals that I say, well, this is definitely not a movie, actually. It's just because you have a camera and you put some images together and it's 60 minutes or 90 minutes, that doesn't really mean it's a movie. But I'm getting harder and harder on myself as far as that goes, and my friends also that are making movies. When they say they're making a movie or they're writing a movie, I think sometimes they, well, I don't even think that is a movie, what you're doing. It's just fun for you. It's like a video game or something. When you're editing those things together and they're on their computers, it's no different than a video game. Sometimes I think that they've just created the content for, maybe.
You mentioned wanting to be a filmmaker since you were smaller.
Yeah. I never wanted to be a cinematographer, even know what that was or anything. You know, of course, when you're young and you're learning about movies and you see pictures of the directors behind the cameras, you don't realize that there's anyone else behind the camera.
Right.
You think, oh, yeah. And some, you know, I think, you know, Stanley Kubrick probably is the photographer of his movies, basically, and there's examples of that. But, I didn't know what that job was, director of photography, and I never cared. I just wanted to be the director. And I still feel that way, basically. I moved to New York and fell into the cinematographer job, and, you know, I have fun with it now. I'm still learning. I'm still finding different angles of it that I get interested in. I'm much more into lighting now than I was a while ago, you know, where I was just into, you know, operating and zooming in on faces and things like that, and having a lot of accidents and putting weird things in front of the camera and all that. And now I'm kind of more and more into lighting and stuff like that. So there's just so many aspects to cinematography. And there's so many, especially if you're the operator, you do everything kind of, there's enough to keep me entertained still. But I would like to try directing.
We had a professor from NYU join us. We were kind of saying that we thought the cinematographers were like an unsung hero. Because really, they do such a critical piece. It's like, you can have a vision, but can you technically get it there, you know?
Yeah, but some directors, like I would say with, you know, Josh and Benny, they're very much in control of the image.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then there's the directors that aren't. And then there's the cinematographers that don't operate, that aren't even doing anything. And the gaffers are really the heroes there. I mean, really, the gaffer is totally unsung still. I mean, then those guys can affect the look of a movie, you know, more than anyone else sometimes, depending on the attitude of the director and director of photography. I know this is for sure. Even me, I mean, my gaffer is critical for me nowadays. It's like that's my partner in crime.
You mentioned a few times you watch a lot of films. Mm-hmm. You're really into cinema. So where do you go for inspiration now? I mean, are you visiting classic films? Are there filmmakers working today that you love? Like, where do you look for inspiration?
Yeah, I only watch old movies, pretty much. And New York is a ridiculous place for it right now. We've got so many movie theaters playing 35mm prints of, you know, great movies and terrible old movies. Mm-hmm. But you can really, I mean, today I'll probably go into the Quad and see a Nicholas Roeg movie or two. That I already know aren't really good movies because I've seen them before years ago on video, but I just to watch the prints means a lot to me still. And just watching the texture on the screen and sort of fall in and out of sleep, sure. I mean, that's every day I'm in New York. I try to go see a movie if I can, but it's all old stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Where
else?
I'm not working or something.
Where are you going? I mean, I know the Metrograph.
Yeah, Metrograph, you know, the quad now. I love the Quad. Now they've just, you know, they remodeled and everything, and it's such an intimate theater. And just the programming is so off the wall, but it seems to always be stuff that I'm in the mood for. So
nice.
Their anthology film archives. My favorite theater in the world, though, is the Walter Reed Theater, Lincoln Center. That's the screen that I've had the most epiphanies and just seriously, that's the church for me. Still.
Cool.
And how important is the theater going experience, do you think, to the future of cinema? Like, we live in a time of Netflix and a million different streaming services and all those types of things. But when you look at, like, we've talked a lot about crafting films and cinema, how important do you see the theater going experience for film?
Well, I don't want to posit the future or anything like that of cinema, but I can say that for me, I'm always thinking of a big screen when we're, you know, framing up, or, you know, the way I shoot is certainly for a movie theater, not for television or for iPhones or anything like that. The thing that upsets me the most when I do see a movie or newer movie is you can tell the TV influence, you know, in the in the filmmaking. You know, there's just the language of television is just really, you know, it's really screwed up, I think, like a lot of, you know, contemporary movies. And you, when you see that language of television on a big screen, it just, it sucks. It's so lifeless, and it's really painful. It's agonizing to me sometimes. So that's why I don't really see very many new movies anymore in the theater. I watch new movies sometimes on the airplanes. That's almost the only place I see new movies, because it really suits, it just suits the air, the back of a seat, the way these people make movies now. That's like,
it's, nice.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I've seen some good ones there too, but not good movies actually. Like Todd Phillips movies, I wouldn't say they're good movies, but they're like my favorite new movies.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is, you know, War Dogs. You know, I love this movie.
Right.
Shamelessly, or shamefully, I don't even know. But anyway, yeah, no. I think that there's only a few places where you can really see the old movies in theaters, and those cities, people love it. Like New York, you know, people, there's always people in these theaters now,
yeah,
seeing old movies, seeing shitty old movies, whatever. Like, there are people there, and young people and old people. When I first moved to New York, it was just old people, I think, you know. It was like a great, you know, graveyard, going to see some of the old movies, and now it's, there's so many more young people. So that's like very, very, very fun for me, and gives me a lot of hope. But this is New York, and this is an exceptional place. You know, Paris, sure, and L.A. has very few options for old movies, which makes no sense to me. I don't understand why there's not. They still have a couple of video stores there, which is cool, and Austin has video stores, and that's the thing, that, of course, that I lament, and we shouldn't even bother talking about, because, you know, I'll just cry for a while or something about it.
You should come to Rochester. There's some really good theaters here, and the George Eastman Museum has a theater that shows Night Shoot,
yeah,
as well as 35 and everything, and they do.
Yeah, I know.
My
friends come up there for the Nitrate thing and all.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, every year. No, I know. I've only driven through Rochester, what is it, Rochester or Buffalo, where there's the Charlie the Butcher's Beef on Weck, somewhere. It's one of those cities you can get beef on Weck.
Yep. That's a whole regional delicacy up here.
What is that?
Yeah.
It's a
sandwich.
Yeah,
that's usually the only place we stop. When I would drive to Toronto, which I used to go there almost every year for the film festival, we'd stop off to get a beef on Weck. And that's my impression of that whole region, really.
Yeah.
I know
you need to revisit.
We'll take you to the place where film is born. We'll go to the film factory if you come to town.
I know. And the film is born and beef on Weck is made.
Yeah.
I was an archivist at Maisel's with Maisel's Films for a while, and I had you know, made contact with the Eastman House they have some of the films, they've archived some of the films for us, because they were not being well maintained in New York City, the Maisel's Film Collection, so we had to like parse it out to places, and that was my connection to Rochester then.
Nice.
But having not gone there, just through email.
Well, we'll make a better connection. You can come up, we'll take you on a tour of the film factory.
Yeah, I'd love to.
And
so you're not going to Toronto?
Not this year.
Okay.
No money right now. I have to prep for a movie in New Orleans soon. So,
well, let's ask about that.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're shooting on yet. Actually, it's like they're not deciding on a format yet.
Well, you like last minute, so
right there you go.
Yeah,
prep time.
Yeah,
I'm not sweating.
Yeah. So what is that? What do you mean? What are you working on next? I saw a couple of other things, at least on IMDb.
That's the only feature I have coming up. It's called Out of Blue, not Out of the Blue, but Out of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Carol Morley, a British lady who is in New Orleans right now, sending me pictures regularly of, you know, the most random things, light fixture. I don't know. She's just getting so into the city, I guess, and just how special it is. And she's adapted this Martin Amis novel, Night Train, from the 90s, and it's a thriller, like a mystery suspense. I like saying that, not thriller, mystery suspense. With Patricia Clarkson,
cool,
Jackie Weaver, and James Caan.
Nice.
And other people who I don't know yet. But I'm excited to work in New Orleans because it's a great place. So their movie theater culture is sad. I would move there if they had movie theaters that played more old movies and stuff. I just can't leave New York right now.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I understand that.
Right. Yep. Yeah. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you and hear about your process and your love of film and film projection and theaters. Kind of one last question before we wrap up is, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but like you're really on a journey here. I mean, you've been doing in a fairly short amount of time, a lot of short films. You're getting, you know, it looks like multiple features going. What advice do you have for somebody who's, say, the Sean Price Williams of 10 years ago? Like, how do you even start this journey? What advice do you have for a young filmmaker?
See, well, this is the problem. I see myself as pretty much a total failure. So I would suggest to anyone to do things very differently than I did. Also, I mean, because I go to the movies so much and I don't really like working, it's made it a lot slower for me. This, you know, I feel like maybe where I am now, I should have been 10 years ago. I just turned 40, and I feel like this, you know, having a movie in the 700 theaters across America should have already happened 10 years ago. So I'm a little bit slow, but that's because I do it my way, and it's not necessarily the right way. I kind of taught myself, and I didn't have any real guidance. I'd be happy to guide somebody, but I would probably tell them to do things mostly differently than the way I did. The one thing I am proud of, though, is that I do keep doing. You know, I will do a $10,000 movie, you know, for a friend or something, because that stuff keeps me on my toes a little bit and reminds me of the whole journey. And that's something that I do feel good that I still do. I haven't gotten too snobby, but I mean, I haven't done any movies that I'm really ashamed of either, so that's pretty good, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't give any advice to any young filmmakers just then.
No, actually, I think if I could paraphrase, don't go to the movies so much. Work really hard and be true to yourself and make
it. Yeah.
Right.
Mean, that's actually
that's
great.
That's a big one.
Yeah, yeah. That's just great advice there. And throughout the whole conversation, that's something that's come up again and again is you're true to your own process and true to your own vision. And I think that shows in the work you're doing.
I mean, so, we've already discussed how success is relative anyway, especially you were saying like film festivals, what is success anyway? So
right.
I think you defined as success for yourself.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think within each project too, you have to build a few guidelines and a few rules. And that's for your career. That's for each project too. As long as you stick by those, like just maybe two rules. Just have two rules for yourself when you're making anything, and it guides you and it makes the project have a kind of a whole, you know, mm-hmm. a feel of a whole. And I think that's also with the career or body of work too. Hopefully, even as a cinematographer, not just a writer director.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. It was great talking with you, and thanks for your support of film, and good luck on your next projects.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
All right.
It is a great satisfaction to be able to speak to you through the medium of this wonderful invention,